Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about are the top 1,000 comics for 2015 as sold through Diamond to retailers. We're also going to recap kind of the top 300 comics for each of the 12 months, both in aggregate and which months did better than others and stuff like that. This is the information reported by Diamond. As is common for the year-end numbers, they do a ranked list with no index value. What that means is while on the top 300 for any given month, like say December, my estimates I think are pretty much dead on the money for about how they did as far as what's reported from Diamond. With this, all I know is item 1 sold better than item 2. I can add up how much item 1 and item 2 did. And if one had fewer reported units than the one below it, I say, well, it must have done that much more and kind of guess at those kind of unreported units. And then I can obviously add those two numbers together and say, well, it must have done about this. But in many cases, these are kind of the minimum number they may have done. And again, I've got what I can account for, what I can guess at, and then what we get from there. This is also one of my least favorite number crunching processes to do, because anything I have not properly cleaned over the course of the year comes back to haunt me at this point. This year in particular, it was Howard the Duck. Apparently earlier in the year, in the first volume, I hadn't caught all of those as being a new volume, so they were attributing to the 2007 run when I was doing my aggregation here, so I had to go clean that up. I think I got most of it, but undoubtedly we're going to hit one or two things where it's like, this looks a little odd. And again, it could just be flat out wrong in some cases.
And I'm assuming it's much worse on the trade side.
Yes, much, much, much worse. TJ was kind and forgiving on that when we recorded yesterday on that. The trades are also just much harder to clean up. Gosh.
Well, they retitle them sometimes and all kinds of things.
Well, you get more volume ones over there than you do even on the monthly side. It's just amazing because they'll do Daredevil Volume 1 by this creative team, Daredevil Volume 2 by that creative team. It just gets it's incredibly hard to keep all this stuff straight. If we look at kind of the breakdown of the top 1,000 list, I don't think it'll come as... First off, going into 2015, I think we knew it was going to be a little bit of an odd year. Convergence was coming, Secret Wars was coming, we'd known that for quite some time. So we knew there were going to be some major oddities in just the publishing lineups from both DC and Marvel. It was unclear at the beginning of the year what we'd be looking at by this point in time. So I didn't think it was going to be anything of a typical year, and it really turned out to be a very strong year for Marvel. They placed 517 items in the top 1,000 for the year. DC had 381 items. Image had 62. Dark Horse and IDW both had 10. And then there were a couple other things from a couple other publishers that made the list. And I think just anecdotally, the success of Secret Wars, the lack thereof for Convergence, I mean, that's some of it here, certainly. But I think Marvel is just clicking more with readers in general, and also the collectible covers and stuff. Man, they've got that down to an art, a science, witchcraft, whatever you choose to call it.
Yeah, and as we've talked about, there seems to be a slightly larger base for Marvel, anyways.
Mm-hmm. I attribute a lot of that in many respects to the X-Men cartoon in the 90s, because I think that galvanized a certain fan base. I think then the X-Men movies and other, in the early 2000s and stuff, I kind of kept that going. I think Marvel has just, they've gotten a lot of people interested in their stuff and kept them there.
Yeah, well, and I'd argue it goes back much... He goes back to the Stan Lee days.
Well, I guess my point is I think popular cartoons at one point lead to potentially better sales a decade or two later. I think a lot of what worked for DC at one point was, again, due to people growing up on the Super Friends cartoon.
Yeah.
Or the Batman show.
But they were still kind of solidly in second place.
Yeah.
Even in those days.
True. I guess when DC was at its best at that point. But you're right. I mean, Marvel's always kind of trounced them just in sales in general.
Yep.
And it's funny because I think most people in general are more familiar with Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and so forth. And at one point in time, it's changed a lot recently with the movies and stuff. They would have had a hard time, you know, listing off a number of Marvel characters.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, Marvel Entertainment has totally fixed that, which is great.
Yep.
But, I mean, that's just the difference a decade or two can make. Now, the price points for the top 1,000. Man, you break it down by this, it's very interesting.
Well, I was going to say, before we move on,
sure.
I just want to talk. It's interesting to just kind of see the spread. You know, Marvel, 37 million units plus, you know, almost 37.5. DC, 21.3 million. Image, 3.4 million. IDW just barely missed a million at 947,000.
And again,
surprisingly, the next highest, mm-hmm, at just over 500,000 is Boom, with only two items, but that's that one.
The Orphan Black one.
The Orphan Black that was the Loot Crate one.
Well, and that in and of itself, it's funny, because again, those are all the totals of what they did in the top 1,000 there.
Yep.
Boom put two items there, one at over 500,000, one at about 6,500. So their average total units for their items in the top 1,000 was over 250,000.
Yes.
Which is like twice what it was for IDW and about, what, five times what it was for most publishers. And it just comes down to the fewer items you had on the list, the more skewed your average could be, depending where you put one or two of those items.
Yeah. And only at 284,000, the fact that Archie put five items on the list, I actually think is really impressive for Archie.
I really think 2015 was a great year for Archie.
Yeah, me too.
They really got noticed, even if they didn't, you know, blow everyone away in terms of sales. They've really, I think, changed fundamentally what that company is publishing these days.
Yep.
Between the reboot of Archie and Jughead and the Black Circle line, you know, they're fundamentally somewhat of a different company. I mean, they're technically the same company, but you know what I mean. It's different than where they were a year ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that transformation to me is just amazing.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you.
I still want to see them bring back the Red Circle stuff, because I think, you know, that's a different audience they could be hitting. But again, what Mark Waid's been doing with the reboot on Archie.
I often wonder if that's, I'm assuming it's a net positive or they wouldn't be doing it, but it would be interesting to compare their traditional sales to kind of this year. You know, I don't know if Archie, the Mark Waid Archie, as good as it is, can sell the little kids on, you know, on the store stands the way the old Archie did.
Well, and that's where mass market and direct market for Archie are just totally different audiences. And I think they've made a huge push to become highly relevant in the direct market. Whether that translates well in the mass market, I don't know.
Or if it hurts them, or, you know, if they were doing badly in the mass market and they were forced to, you know, who knows?
I don't think it hurts them, because they've still got all the digests and stuff, and those are still the classic Archie, you know, stories and whatnot in that style. It's not like their entire publishing line suddenly flipped over to this new tone and style.
That is true.
But again, great year for them as well. Again, by price point, man, you look at this and it is just a complete landslide, with 706 of the top 1,000 items at $3.99. The fact that we still had 178 items at $2.99 is a little bit reassuring, but man, don't expect that again next year.
The much more depressing number is the 86 items, or over 8.5% of the list, at $4.99.
Yeah. Well, and if you add the 14 items at $5.99, the three items at $7.99, the other item at $9.99, I mean, that's over 10% of the list.
Yeah, yeah. 14 items at $5, 88 at $4.99. I mean, that's $5 and $6 books, and that's 100 right there.
Yeah. So it's just amazing. the fact that we've gotten to where $399 is de facto a standard price point at this point. I mean, and becoming not just standard, but it's uncommon to see less than that. We only had 8 at the $3.50 price point, which is favored by Image and Dark Horse. And I'm expecting by this time next year, if we see much of anything on this list below $399, I'll be pleasantly surprised. And my fear is that we're going to see the $499 and $599 stuff. Probably $499 having at least 100 items on the list. Don't know about $599, but I think it'll have a significant number, more than the 14 it had this year.
Yeah. And I know we talked about it, or you guys talked about it on the trade episode. What was the quarter book? That was something by Robert Kirkman, as I remember.
It was Invincible number 118.
There you go.
Which is actually, it will, when we get to the actual list of the top 1,000, remind me to look at that, and I'll point out which one that was. Because this is the only time I got visibility into roughly how that sold.
Oh, it wasn't on the normal list.
Because it was promotional price, it didn't show up on the monthly list.
But it did. I'm surprised they didn't take the same stance on the yearly list.
That's the great thing about consistency.
Yes.
And some of this is just, I don't know if they just didn't catch it, didn't think about it. It's a different report written by some other guy. Don't know. But really, until I noticed it on this list, and I'm like, how come I can't account for any hard numbers here in the reported units? And then I'm looking, and it's like, it just didn't show.
Yeah.
So, and it makes sense. But why take that off the list, but then keep on the stuff that are bulk purchases for Loot Crate and stuff?
Well,
they're different kinds of promotions, but they're both promotional sales. And I would argue the 25-cent price on Invincible is still indicative of people wanting that particular issue versus a bulk purchase, which is people just wound up getting a copy.
I understand that argument, and I completely agree with it. However, I will say this as someone who's worked a lot in retail and owns manufacturing companies now. There's a big difference between when someone calls me and says, hey, I want to place a large order of your items, and I give them a decent discount for doing so. And when I say, or, you know, when a big box store says to me, hey, I need so many posters, those are very different types of sales.
And that's fair. I guess I'm looking at the numbers we get on the top 300 every month as an indication of interest in the title.
Yes.
And granted, at 25 cents, it's going to be skewed because of the low price point. It's still indicative of interest in the title. Whereas, again, the Orphan Black issue that went into Loot Crate and stuff is not.
Yes. I mean, it shows something because, I mean, there are people that curate those boxes and they have to keep their customers happy to keep buying them. So there is something to be said for attracting that type of buyer. But yes, it is completely different.
I'm all for attracting that kind of buyer. I think putting them in the boxes is great. I just wish they would be clear in how they report those numbers.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, and the one we talked about just in the December numbers that had the reorder for the Deadpool that was clearly discounted based on the retail rank.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things TJ and I talked about last night in the year-end trades number is there was a Bob's Big Burger that was priced at $2.70 on the trade list for Comics Bento.
Yep.
So, I mean, clearly they got a heck of a discount, as they should.
Yep.
So it was nice to have that kind of clearly spelled out that way on this list on the trade side. If we break this list down by month, January is pretty much the low point with only 69 items on it. April was the strongest month with 115 items. But by and large, it was an average of about 94. So most things kind of fell close enough to the average to make sense. You know, I would have... frankly, I would have expected a little bit more in October, just because I think that's when a lot more of the post-Secret Wars titles launched. Most of the items on this list showed up on time, about three quarters, about a quarter were late. That happens. It's pretty commonplace. Let's see. If we go to the top of the list, what we've got is a clear outlier. I don't think it's going to be any surprise to anyone that this topped the list. It was Star Wars number one with the million units plus the 1,070,352 units. Again, it's Star Wars. It had a bazillion covers. You know, the next closest thing, which did a little over half that at 544,341 units, is Secret Wars number one. The one that, well, really the next two are a little surprising, a little bit cheats, but again, we talked about them before on the monthly stuff. Bravest Warriors Tales of Hollow John number one from Boom Studios with the 5,202,000.
Oh, that's what we were talking about. That's not the Orphan Black.
Well, both Orphan Black and Bravest Warriors, both of those have been...
Orphan Black's the...
Is the IDW one. Bravest Warriors Tales of Hollow John is the Boom one.
Gotcha.
Both did right around 5 million units. Little above, little below.
500,000.
I'm sorry, yeah, half a million. Units, too many numbers, and they're much bigger than we usually talk about. So, I mean, the fact these are up here is fine and good, but... take away that bulk purchase, suddenly these are way further down.
But those are, again, to be fair, for looking for interest from readers, I think what you're saying is correct. But again, for Boom Studios, selling 500,000 units, that's a good sale. I mean, that could be half their budget for the year, if not more.
Oh, absolutely. That was about $2.5 million at full retail value.
Yeah.
Granted, they didn't get full retail value.
I mean, even if they got 800,000-900,000, I mean, that could be several months of normal sales for them.
Absolutely. Is it good income for them? Totally. Is it a good promotional approach? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I think less so for Bravest Warriors because that was a one shot. I don't know that there's a clear you should have gone to this next comic.
Is that a book they continue to publish, or was that really the only one?
That was a one-shot. There are Bravest Warriors books, but The Tales of Hollow John was a one-shot.
Okay, but there are Bravest Warriors books.
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. And actually, I don't think it's the worst way to go about it, then.
No. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for doing a one-shot, get a full thing, and as long as that comic is clearly pointing people to, hey, you like it, here's how to get more.
Yeah.
That's a win. You know, likewise, Orphan Black, it was timed in the right point for when it came out compared to when that season came out. There were other issues of that series. I didn't think the content was particularly the best thing to use for promotion. It felt like a little bit more of a recap of the show. So I don't think it really brought anything new to the table in that issue. Other ones did.
Well, and as we saw, it didn't particularly sell. It didn't seem to help Orphan Black at all, because we didn't see the other issues. Many of them didn't make the list, and the few that did were very, very barely made the list.
Well, it had like a, 80-90% drop on that next issue.
Yes. And then I think by the next issue, it was off the list.
I think so. So I don't think they did a good job galvanizing the fan base for that show, and that's unfortunate. Next item on the list is Dark Knight 3 Master Race number 1, 449,098 units. And then the only other thing over the 400,000 mark with 411,796 is Star Wars Vader Down number 1. Now this one, I've got the copy I bought, two copies that came in the Marvel Collector Corps, and I think one copy that came in maybe the Comic-Con box or something. This one was in multiple subscription boxes, and in one or two cases, multiple copies of it were in the same box.
Yep.
So obviously not all subscription boxes are created equal, Loot Crate being kind of the brass ring, some of the others doing much smaller numbers, comparatively smaller numbers to Loot Crate.
Yep.
Still, good thing to put in there.
And, you know, we got some more number ones after that. You know, Darth Vader, Spider-Gwen, Invincible Iron Man, Princess Leia, Deadpool, Amazing Spider-Man. I think it's where it ranked 13 that the list gets interesting.
Well, that's the first one that's not a number one.
Well, yeah, and that's where you start to see them cluster. And that's the first three or four Star Wars, you know, the next five or six are the first couple of Secret Wars and the first couple of Star Wars issues.
Yeah. And if really you look at the top 30 items, it is just overwhelmingly Marvel, with what, two issues of Dark Knight 3 in there, the Boom Bravest Warriors thing, the Orphan Black from IDW, everything else is Marvel.
Yep.
Heavy on Star Wars, heavy on Secret Wars, Anything that's not specifically that is usually just one of the first issues of a Secret Wars related miniseries.
Well, like I said, seeing, you know, Secret Wars 2, 3, 4, Star Wars 2, 4, 5, 6, you know, we always talk about wanting consistent sales, or, you know, there's some consistent sales there, unlike anything else in this part of the list.
I would agree with that. It's unfortunate with Secret Wars, of course, now that it's finally over, that, you know, those sales can't possibly repeat except for the ninth issue in 2016. But when they've got hits, they, you know, they've had some strong ones. Again, the 1-2 punch of Star Wars and Secret Wars was just great for Marvel this year.
Yeah. And again, I think while you say Secret Wars is not repeatable, absolutely it's not repeatable. But I think that goes back to the somewhat larger Marvel fan base. They could do this with another event.
I was going to say, I know somebody's out there saying, but Civil War number 2 is on the way.
Or whatever, yeah.
So, I mean, yes, they can do another event, but let's take a look, you know, at those past events. Aside from Civil War and Secret War, some of the other events have done good, but not that great. So they can do other events, but that's not to guarantee that they're going to kind of knock it out of the park like they did this time, like they did with Civil War about 5 years ago.
Yeah. And there have been some that have been downright questionable, you know, even on, you know, just talking sales. I'm not talking story wise or anything.
Mm-hmm.
The Hammer one, as I remember, didn't do particularly well.
The Fear Itself, I think it was. Yeah.
The
fact that you can't even remember the name, not a good sign. It is a little disappointing, though, that the top dozen items are all first issues.
But expected.
It is expected, but when we've got, 293 first issues on this list, now that goes beyond just the top 1,000, though. If I limit it to the top 1,000, it's 253.
So a quarter.
Quarter of the list.
Yeah.
And again, I expect those to be on there because, you know, number one, sell better than most things. A lot of titles never recoup the losses after that.
I think much more disturbing than the fact that 250 number ones made the list is that there were 250 number ones.
Yes.
From the time I started collecting for the first decade, if I had bought every number one that came out, I could have made it to the end of the decade, not gotten to 250.
Yeah. There was a period where getting first issues, man, that was hard, and it would take forever to fill a short box, much less a long box of comics that way.
Exactly.
You know, for me, it was All-Star Squadron, Alpha Flight. I didn't actually get on New Teen Titans at the time. I should have. I wound up getting that as a back issue. But it's just so few and far between, whereas now, every week, there's half a dozen of them. And I really don't think that's a good thing for the industry. It is also surprising how quickly we start to get below, say, the 200,000 mark. And again, having 20 items sell above that in a year, that's actually really, really good. But it's just the numbers keep dropping off. And those 20 items account for like 6, almost 7 million units of guaranteed sales through what was reported, a little bit higher if you go for the guesstimate on the unreported stuff.
But again, that's, you know, it's hard to complain about, you know, some of those are just great sales. You know, sometimes you just got to, you know, they have found a way to sell a lot of comics.
And that's really what it's all about. And I think that's great. The fact that we've got, what, another 73 or so that sold between 1 and 200,000 units.
Yep.
That's great.
And what's amazing is I look down this list. Once you get past all the number ones, mm-hmm. and Secret Wars and Star Wars with the first, you know, 8 or so, it's amazing when you're just looking at the column issue number, all of a sudden 40, 41, 39, 43, it's all Batman. It's the only thing other than 1-2 Secret Wars and Star Wars that's anywhere near this top 100.
Yeah. Well, again, so many things, really, if we limit this to just DC... you take out, I mean, you've got Dark Knight, you've got Batman, you've got Justice League. Surprisingly, you've got Convergence number one at rank 50. But then once you get past, again, Batman, Convergence, Justice League, and Harley Quinn or whatever, you've got to go a ways down before you really start getting any other title.
Yep.
And this goes back to DC just really needs to kind of beef up their lineup, their sales, just in general. They should have some other stronger titles.
Or they need to put out number ones of all those books twice a year. One of the two.
I'd rather they have stronger story than more number ones, but really what I think hurt DC the most this year was Convergence just being a misfire. It had its moments. It was not, oh my God, horrible, but it was something that was very easy to get apathetic about.
It was extremely easy to get apathetic about. You know, well, hey, I went from reading 40 to 50 DC titles a month to reading, I don't know, 5.
Not all of the Convergence things even made it in the top 1,000 this year. There were a couple of second issues that didn't.
Well,
and, you know, given where the list kind of bottoms out again around what the
27,000 mark?
27,000, 28,000 mark, yeah. The fact that DC didn't have a strong event and Marvel did really was what I think tipped the scales considerably.
Yeah. And again, tipped the scales more so. You know, again, going back years past, the scales are tipped a little bit to begin with.
It's always lopsided in Marvel's favor. Absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely. If we filter the list to Image for a second, specifically yep. going and looking at Invincible.
Ah, yes.
This is one where I was going through the list and I'm like, how come I'm hitting Invincible 118 and I've got like zero reported units? And again, like I was saying earlier, this was the 25-cent issue. They just, you know, didn't put it on the monthly list.
Yep.
And it's also, I believe, the only issue of Invincible to make the list. So it was a good promotional thing for Kirkman to do. I really applaud him. That is at rank 430. Again, I applaud him for doing it and kind of putting his money behind that. But you look at the top of the Image stuff, and it is just so heavy with Walking Dead, as should be expected.
It is. You know, we talk about how, you know, Marvel's got Secret Wars, number ones, Star Wars, DC's kind of got Batman. Image has The Walking Dead, and after that, it kind of all gets questionable.
Well, I would say the other strong thing is Saga.
Yes, but almost all of them are below almost all of The Walking Dead's.
Absolutely, absolutely. But they've got at least, and all of these are, again, lower than, say, even some of the DC stuff.
Yep.
I think Image has a lot of things that in 2014 were poised to be top of the list type stuff, but, you know, Jupiter's Legacy kind of misfired, didn't get stuff out. They've had a few other things of that sort. I think it's been a strong year for Image. They've really, I think, particularly on the trade side, built up a lot of credibility, a lot of strong sales.
Yep.
And the fact that they've got a number of titles that were, at least for the first issue, going neck and neck with Walking Dead, with We Stand on Guard, Paper Girls, Descender, Chrononauts and stuff. Actually, it's a little below, but still in the ballpark. That's a good sign.
And I will say this, too. Once you get past The Walking Dead, one of the things that I'm surprised by, and again, I think it's a great thing, you're looking at issue numbers, it's not all number ones.
No.
They're under 10, but they're not, you know, there's threes, there's fours, there's seven, there's five, there's six, there's two, there's eight. It's not all just number ones, which, again, I actually think is a positive sign for them in their books.
Absolutely. And the single digit under 10 kind of a thing, I have a very different interpretation of that for Image than I would for Marvel and DC. Because at Marvel and DC, it's the same basic properties. They just keep revoluming it.
Yes.
Image, this is basically reflective of the fact that there are different properties, different creative teams, different projects that are coming out.
Yes.
So it's a
bunch of miniseries.
Yeah, it's an influx of new material, not retreads of existing material.
It's a bunch of miniseries and or, as I've argued, what should be OGNs. And it's funny, you and TJ on the trades issue were talking about Brian Hibbs and his article talking about how hard it is to sell an OGN.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of went, okay, now at least I understand why they don't do it, even though from a storytelling-wise, I'd argue there's many Image books that probably should be.
Well, and I think the original graphic novel format is, as a reader, very beneficial. But as a reader, one, I tend to let trades sit around for a long time.
Yep.
So it's hard to really get me hooked, even if you've gotten me to buy the thing, because I've still got to get the time to read it.
Yep.
but two, it's just because of the higher price point, harder to get me to even buy the thing.
Well, and I'll give you a perfect example. I think this might be true for both of us. Both of us are fairly substantial DC fans, and I believe both of us have, for the most part, enjoyed the Earth One books.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I read the first couple, probably had the rest of them. I think I bought all the rest of them. They were sitting on my shelf. It wasn't until you and I decided to do an episode on them that I actually caught up and read them all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I bought one or two more that have come out since then, and I haven't read them yet either.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't like them. I'm not somehow they fall through the cracks.
For me, and I know I've mentioned this before, and it's going to sound absolutely ludicrous, it's just they seem a little daunting to read that much.
Yep.
And, I mean, it's crazy because I get like 50 comics a week, and I can plow through that. But, man, reading one six-issue story of a single thing in one sitting that's in a hardcover or trade paperback, that's a serious time investment. It's like I know it's ridiculous, but it's just how I am.
Well, but I think it's how a lot of us are.
Yeah. And I'm willing to gamble on something to lower the price point is.
Yep.
True. Again, with that Invincible 118, he got a lot of copies out there. It didn't translate into sales after that. He at least tried. I give, again, Kirkman a lot of credit on that.
Now, is that an existing issue, or was that a reprint, or did he literally put out the 118th issue in its regular price at that price?
That was the regular issue 118 at that price.
Wow.
That is the second most impressive kind of promotional thing I've seen done. And as impressive as that is, I'm going to say it's a distant second. The most impressive one I've ever seen, and it's what got me hooked on this title and this creator, was Love and Capes. Quarterly book for at least 2 years running. The issue that came out that quarter came out on Free Comic Book Day as a free issue. So one out of four comics a year.
A quarter of the books for the year were free.
Yeah, and awesome, and accessible, and got me wanting more. That's what, I mean, again, I think Tom Zoller is just an amazing creator. And for him to have really taken that approach in trying to earn readers, it's just, my hat is off to him. And as far as I'm concerned, it totally paid off. I'll follow him to wherever he goes next.
Yeah, well, and you and Drew, the year end, both highly praised his current series, Long Distance.
Long Distance.
Yeah.
I still think that would make just a terrific movie of the week or whatever over at Hallmark or something.
You gotta shoot higher than Hallmark. Come on.
Well, I mean, it fits that audience, I think, really well. But I also think that anyone who wants to learn how to write comics needs to pick up some of Tom Zoller's stuff. Yeah. Because the accessibility in Long Distance, the amount of characterization, the level of depth we got to know these characters, their situation and stuff, it was just phenomenal. Disappointingly, of course, this shows up nowhere in the top 1,000, even though I think it was one of the best things written this year. But go figure, that happens. If we do take a look at what IDW had on the list, we've talked about that Orphan Black at just shy of 500,000 copies.
Yep.
Back to the Future number 1 at 75,000. Sales, of course, have fallen since then. We see 2 and 3 at what rank? 880 and 989.
Yep.
With around a little under 26,000 each.
Yep.
But that title's doing well enough. They've promoted it from miniseries to ongoing. I think that's awesome. Most of the other stuff that IDW had on the list was licensed property. Actually, those obviously were from Black and Back to the Future licensed properties.
Yeah, those are all licensed properties.
But we've got the Star Trek Green Lantern Spectrum War stuff. We've got Gem and the Holograms. We've got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. IDW is doing a really good job with the licensed properties. I think their Star Wars stuff is just terrific. And I really...
Star Trek,
sorry. Star Wars is over at Marvel. I know these things. Thank you for correcting me, though. What I think has been smart with the way IDW is doing the licensed properties is it's from a lot of different licensees.
Well, and here's a question. With Kevin Eastman still doing the book, is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles really a licensed property, or is that more of a creator-owned thing they're publishing?
That's a fair question. I would have to look at the indicia. I think it was a licensed property, but is now essentially just creator-owned. I mean, the guy has a studio inside their office.
Exactly. in a gorgeous studio. Interestingly enough, if you follow him on Facebook, they just did a tour of his office, like a 5-minute video.
Oh, nice.
And he's got some amazing memorabilia.
One of these, what I had hoped to do this last year at San Diego, but just didn't have the time, was to go tour their office. Because the hotel we were staying at was really just a couple of blocks away. They're over now in Liberty Station and whatnot. We drove by it, but didn't have time to tour it. I really think them, whatever they did to finagle that, both getting the turtle stuff and getting him actively involved in what they're doing, that was just a smart move.
And also to see two of them pop up on this list and not be in successive issues and not, you know, one, there was a major thing that happened, but again, you know, it shows up again 5 issues later. You know, it wasn't like they you know, did one big thing and that's the only thing that sold either.
Absolutely. The fact that the plot point in 44 got a lot of notice, and then 50, nice round issue and stuff. I think it was also an extra sized issue at $7.99.
It was.
So I think that accounts for some of its interest too. But the fact that they're making Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles relevant and interesting and people are excited about it these days, that property is, what, 25 years old?
At least. And I would argue this is the best it's been since those original, like, 8 issues.
I was aware of it back around the time of those original 8 issues. I was not reading it. I had a friend in high school who was, though. What gets me is just how there's the core concept of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, how flexible it can be to do everything from the cartoon, the live-action TV show they did in the 90s, the movies, etc. Yep. One of the last times I was at a Toys R Us, they had like an 8 or 9 action figure set of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I think it was Michelangelo or Donatello, one of the turtles. And here are the 8, you know, this is the original comic version, here's the live-action version, here's the movie version, here's the cartoon version, here's this other cartoon version. And just, again, the nuanced iterations of them.
Yeah, and you know, it's a fully fleshed-out cast, and along with all of that, talking about cartoons, Nickelodeon did really well with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon that they may still be producing, I'm not sure. But I know they were a couple of years ago, and that was actually pretty good.
The computer animated one?
Yeah, it was a little too computer animated for my taste, but
I think it's still going.
Yeah, it was really good. I just, the animation kind of took me out of it.
Downstairs, I think I've got the DVD set of the live action show they did in the 90s.
Yep.
Because that was done by Saban, who was doing Power Rangers. It was actually a crossover at one point.
Yep.
So, I mean, the fact that property is still going strong, and has evolved but remained true to itself, I really respect that. But, you know, it wasn't all that long ago IDW would have had something other than Turtles that would have been very clearly creator-owned, either Lock and Key or something like that. But they're still doing a few things like that. Again, Long Distance, good example. But it's just where they're having a lot of their success is more the licensed properties.
Yep. Dark Horse is interesting. In some ways, it's respectable. They're on the list. And the other ways, you talk about licensed properties. There's 10 items. They are the 8 issues of Fight Club, number 2, and Archie versus Predator.
1 and 2. Yeah, yeah. The fact that it's like every issue of Fight Club there is just, there's consistency there.
Yeah, and head and shoulders above anything else Dark Horse is doing, unfortunately.
I think Dark Horse had a good year, not a brilliant year, but given they don't have the Star Wars property, you know, they've got to find kind of what's their next thing, because they're still doing some great books, Usagi Yojimbo, Hellboy, things like that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I noticed, is Hellboy selling below 28,000, or did Mignola just take a year off?
If we look at the monthly top comics data, I've got everything from the top lists of the year in alphabetical order. So as I scroll down there looking for Hellboy, there were a number of things.
Or BPRD.
They were selling in the 14,000-15,000 range.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of, he's still doing it. It's just not the top-selling stuff.
Yeah.
Or at least not enough to get into the top 1,000. Let me phrase it that way.
And the BVRD stuff's even lower in the 7,000 range. So.
It just comes down to, you know, after 100 or so issues of Hellboy in one form or another, you know, the fact it's still around, I think, is a major accomplishment.
Yep. Well, and two major motion pictures.
Yeah. Well, and a cartoon.
And a cartoon.
And I believe this was the property that went from comic to movie to cartoon to comic to movie to back to comic. I mean, it's one that went full circle a few times, being adapted from one medium to another, back to the original, back to another type thing.
Yeah.
It was quite surreal. If we take a look at, let's see, we've done Marvel, we've done DC, we've done all the Premier publishers, yes?
We've done all the Premier publishers.
Let's go head over to Boom.
Okay. Look at these two.
Yeah.
They've
got a few below.
Yeah.
But those are like rank 1550 to 1924 or whatever. Really, the only other thing other than the Bravest Warriors Tales of Hollow John they had in the top 1,000 was Claws number one.
And that barely made it at 935 and 25,000 units. But as you point out, there's some unreported units because that wouldn't even made the list.
Correct. That had at least 6,500 unreported units. Over at Dynamite, the only thing to show up in the top 1,000 was James Bond, the first issue of that. We see issues 2 and 3 below the radar of that. Again, I get the top 1,000 for everybody. Then they also have supplemental lists of the small press and the indie press. And basically for each, what they do is they for the small press, they just take out the premier publishers. And then for the indie press, they take out kind of that next rung of publishers to get further down. And there's overlap between the two lists. So I just go for the distinct stuff and add it.
I actually do want to talk about the four books Valiant managed to place on the list.
Okay.
Book of Death 1 and 2, Bloodshot Reborn, and Wrath of the Eternal Warrior number 1. They're hanging in there. We'd love to see them do better.
Mm-hmm.
After all the talk, consternation, bad idea, good idea, terrible idea, at the end of the year, what is your take on the Book of Death now and the variant issues?
Bad idea. I think while that first issue sold 61,464 units, and that's a good thing for them, the cost of that, I think, was some goodwill. And I think that's a very expensive commodity these days. And one that prior to that, I think it cost them there, seriously.
Yeah.
Having read both Book of Death and Book of Death Legend of the Geomancer, which was, again, that incentive series, and paying a fairly serious price for that. I think
yeah, I was going to say, you paid quite a bit for those.
I think it was $20 for the first, maybe $10 for each of the other three or something. I forget.
Yeah, I think it was $25 and
something
30
like that
for the other three, you know, 10 apiece.
It was $50-$60.
Yeah.
For four issues that didn't feel particularly incredible, insightful, or earth-shattering.
Or even necessary.
So it left me a little bit jaded, and the Wrath of the Eternal Warrior that came out of it, it really isn't working totally for me. I get what they were trying to do. I understand why they were trying to do some of it. And the push to get more of their stuff into more stores, I am totally for. I think they went about it the wrong way. And it clearly wasn't particularly successful because we're not really seeing any noticeable change in most of those other titles. You know.
On the other hand, Here's the interesting thing. We just talked about Invincible. Robert Kirkman found a way to get a bunch of books in stores. Valiant found a way to get a bunch of books in stores. Robert Kirkman essentially did it, though, by taking it out of his own pocket, and it had no noticeable effect to us. I'm not saying it didn't, but no noticeable to us. Same thing with Book of Death. Instead of costing them, it probably made them quite a bit of money and still had no noticeable effect. So I guess if you're going to try something that probably won't work anyways, maybe trying something that makes you a few bucks is a better way to go about it than one that costs you.
It comes down to what's your goal. If your goal is to get more readers, doing it at the expense of goodwill on the readers you've got, that's a risky proposition.
It is.
if it's just a matter of do you make money or do you lose money, obviously not losing money is the way to go. But I don't see any bump in sale on their books as a result of this.
No, I agree. But like I said, we didn't really see a bump in Invincible either.
No, but the entire reason put forth for the Book of Death, Legend of the Geomancer's Incentive Series was they were frustrated that their books weren't getting into enough stores and enough units. Yep. So the goal here was to incentivize the retailers to get more copies out there.
Yep.
And really all it did was inflict a major price point on their hardcore fans.
Yeah.
And I think they should have seen that one coming. I'm willing to give it a little bit of a pass this one time, but if it happens again, don't know that I'll get whatever that incentive series could be. And if I don't get that, then suddenly I'm no longer all in. And if I'm not all in, I could think of one or two titles I could drop.
Yeah, well, and we've talked about this in the past, and again, it's kind of beating a dead horse. It's one book, one by one, you know, listening to guys like you and other, you know, people talking and, you know, friends and whatever. Valiant pulled me in, it, you know, title by title, kind of at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started, I think, with Archer and Armstrong, and then, hey, let's give Bloodshot, okay, Harbinger. The, okay, we're going to just put out a new number one every month and cancel all these books. That got me all out.
It was very easy at the beginning to follow their books. When they started rotating their titles,
yeah,
it got very confusing to me as to, well, what are they coming out with these days? And I get wanting to do a bunch of different properties or whatever, but sometimes it's just they're continuing the same story under a different title with maybe a slightly different focus.
Yeah.
And I know they've got like a 2-year plan for either, I think it's Ninjak and Bloodshot and stuff. And they were up front at the last convention I saw them at one of their panels with, hey, maybe we won't get the full 2 years out under the current volume, but we'll keep going. We'll just, implication was we'll do another new number one.
Yeah.
And I get it.
But here's the question. Did it really work?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I mean, you know, look at these numbers and Book of Death did well. The first issues of Bloodshot Reborn, Wrath of the Eternal Warrior, and Ninjak did well. Everything else is at least half that, including the first issues of Divinity and Ivar and Dr. Mirage and Imperium and Dead Drop, for that matter. I think they've got some good ideas, some good stories, but they need to perhaps back off a little from the shared universe and trying to build this big narrative universe and just not ignore it, not disavow it, not break it, but focus on just each title being just the best it can be. The fact that if you like Harbinger right now, it's hard to know what you really ought to be reading.
That was the other issue. When I was reading the first one, I really kind of fell in love with was Harbinger. And it was one of the ones that disappeared when they did all those number ones.
Mm-hmm.
As did Archer Armstrong, I believe.
And it's coming back.
Okay. Well, but, what is this, a year and a half later now?
Yeah. The fact there's no transfer plan for readers on certain books to, well, you should just pick up this one.
Yeah.
Flip side is if it's a very clear transfer plan like that, then why are you renumbering?
Yeah.
Tough spot for them to be in.
Yeah, but like I said, you know, the other side of that argument is you look at Invincible and you go, well, they essentially each did the same thing. One cost the creator a fortune. One made them a fortune. You might as well make money and end up with the same result.
But that's the thing is I don't think it was the same result. I think while neither one resulted in more sales, Kirkman's gave him better goodwill and Valiant's cost them goodwill. And it's hard to get people to buy your stuff if they're a little annoyed with you.
Yes.
So I see that as just a fundamental difference between the two.
Any other publishers we want to talk about?
Like to go over to take a look at Titan real quick.
Yeah, a couple of Doctor Who books.
Almost exclusively Doctor Who books. We've got Minions number one, Assassin's Creed number one, Heroes Vengeance number one, and Blacklist number one hidden in there.
And all below the top 1,000.
Yeah.
There's literally two Doctor Who books in the top 1,000. Doctor Who the Ninth Doctor and Doctor Who the Four Doctors number one.
Yeah.
That ranks 633 and 988, respectively.
But the fact that they had, you know, geez, how many of these Doctor Who things, if you go below that radar, nearly 20 of them, 19.
Yep.
That's impressive. And this is one of the rare cases where I think they have taken a particular licensed property, created a lot of books.
Yes, they have.
But it doesn't feel like they're strip mining the property.
Well, that's good.
And to me, that's the impressive part.
Yeah.
You know, anytime some other publishers, Dynamite at one point would do this with like Green Hornet and stuff, it wasn't a property that lent itself to this kind of parallelization. Whereas each Doctor having his own identity, incarnation, whatever, and having Doctors 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 on here, in some cases with one or two different titles that flipped over, I think they're doing well with that. Again, everything they've got on here is licensed properties. Much of it, again, from the BBC, if they lose that license, suddenly everything they've got with Doctor Who, poof, gone. And that could happen. I mean, it used to be over at IDW. Again, very reliant on that, but I'm liking what they're doing.
And they've stuck with seemingly the current group and the current popular group.
They're predominantly doing ones from the relaunch. Nine is going to go on going after this. So 9, 10, 11, 12 all have current titles. 8th is a miniseries, and then they're doing, I think, the 4th Doctor, and I'm sure over the course of 2016, maybe into 17, they'll probably touch on most of the others.
Well, and the fourth Doctor would be the one I might actually pick up.
Well, and that's where I think the strength of this property is. For the cost of presumably the one license, they've got 12 sub-franchises, 13 yep. or 14, depending how you count, that they can really run with.
And I think it's interesting, you said they're doing an 8th Doctor?
Yeah, that's at rank 1860.
Okay, so the Doctor that didn't really exist.
That
was the TV movie Doctor. He barely existed.
Yeah, I suggest everyone start with, because really for the time of an hour and a half movie.
Yeah, you followed get the entire 8th Doctor.
Almost. You've got another 10-minute prequel to the 50th anniversary episode.
Okay.
But for under 2 hours worth of time, you've got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to see Boom take this approach with Power Rangers. They've got the license. I don't know if it's just Mighty Morphin or if they've got the full franchise, but that's got like 20 teams they could go play with. And I'm not saying go do 20 comics. That would be absolutely ridiculous. But go do some miniseries, keep some stuff coming out, keep the interest. It allows you to bounce between branches of the franchise, get people into the habit of there's always something from that franchise to go read.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always something different in that franchise to go read.
Weird, interesting fact. How is the current Doctor doing?
The current...
the 12th Doctor.
That is a good question. Do we have...
I see one, like, issue 4 on here.
Let me go to the monthly top comics tab.
95.
So the 12th Doctor is doing, on average, around 10,500 units, thereabouts.
Okay. He was a very interesting choice.
Capaldi?
Yes.
Yeah.
Extremely, you know, he's got the advantage of being the current one, so you think he'd do a little better. On the other hand, he is the oldest Doctor by a mile. Well, excuse me. Him and the first Doctor are the two oldest actors to play the Doctor by a mile, and they were virtually the same age when they started. However, he doesn't feel nearly as old as William Hartnell did in that first series.
No, not at all. And I think part of it is just over the 50 years, our sense of what's old has changed.
Yes.
And I think the other challenge Capaldi has is the Doctor that's also, I think, they're handling better in the comic than in the show, is he's often overshadowed by his companion.
Yeah.
And Clara is his companion in the comic, but he is the hero. Whereas it feels like at times in the TV show, she's the Doctor, he's the companion.
Yeah. But yeah, it was interesting when I looked up the list of Doctors. You're looking at, you know, what age they were when they started, and wow, he's the same age William Hartnell was at the first episode, and like I said, those two are clearly the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't feel, at least from what I've seen, nearly as old to me.
No, cantankerous and cranky, certainly, but no.
But not the doddering little old man in the tuxedo from that first series.
No. He's more the kids get off my lawn old guy.
Exactly.
The value of this property, though, is somewhere around 642,000 units.
Yeah, I mean, that's over 500,000.
I mean, that's still half that first issue of, say, Star Wars or something. But, you know, they're running with the property. They're doing a good job.
Which leads to the other question. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this. Dark Horse was not able to do what Marvel was able to do with Star Wars, even when they had movies coming out. We even, you know, at one point looked back at that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a property you can think of, like the Doctors, like Star Trek, whatever, that could do anything like what Star Wars is doing if one of the big two possibly got them and really threw everything behind it? I mean,
first off, Star Wars is Star Wars and nothing else is.
Okay.
So I would be hard-pressed to come up with anything that I think has the cultural resonance of that property.
Okay.
That having been said, do I think there are other properties that if a comic publisher were to take and run with could be potentially fairly successful with? Stargate comes to mind. I think...
Really?
Less so now than, say, 5 years ago.
See, I think... Okay. While I agree Star Wars is a cultural phenomenon unlike anything else, Stargate to me is a little too niche.
It had 17 seasons of television.
Yes.
A couple of TV movies and plus the main movie. It's got a following.
Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman had 10 seasons too. I guess I'm thinking Star Trek, maybe Indiana Jones, maybe the Terminators. Something that have a broader, you know, kind of in the collective consciousness.
Fair enough.
I just don't know what it is, and I don't know which of, you know, Marvel and or DC, which I think is part of one of the elements that's necessary.
I think it's one of the elements necessary to get into enough stores, yeah. to get enough orders. Absolutely. I do think one of the properties out there that has been picked up recently, that if they could mobilize the fan base and tap into it, could do phenomenal, is Power Rangers.
Yeah, that one, I actually, I'll give you that one much more than Stargate.
Again, with Power Rangers, they went with the iconic team, and that makes sense.
Yep.
But I think there are enough fans of varying ages, I mean, generations of fans of that mm-hmm. stuff, that they could do well with.
Yeah.
But it's hard to come up with, off the top of my head, properties that I think, wow, if they had just pulled this, they would be printing money.
Well, like I said, Star Trek's got a new movie coming out. It's always possible. And a new TV series.
Well, and I think Star Trek is one that they could be doing a lot more with over at IDW. They're doing a great job with the franchise. Don't get me wrong. I love the movie-based ongoing series. I loved the classic series photomosaic stuff John Byrne is doing.
Oh, yeah.
But fans of Voyager, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, Next Generation, there's really nothing catering to them at the moment. And there are a few novel-based branches of the franchise that potentially they could tap into.
Well, and there's a part of me, and maybe it's just personal, and so I'm projecting, but I don't think so, at least not. I think kind of our middle age range, Next Generation might be the most popular franchise they have, or at least the most ingrained currently.
Oh, absolutely.
In the kind of collective consciousness.
But I think there are certain stories and fans you would get with that. I think there are different fans and different kinds of stories you could tell, both with Enterprise, with Deep Space Nine, etc. So if you can get a good monthly series out of each, it's worth thinking about.
Yeah.
The trick is, how do you expand to that without making people feel obligated to get them all, burning them out, or otherwise strip mining the property? It clearly can be done. I think Titan has proven that.
Well, and Star Wars has proven that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
There's a book coming out a week, it feels like.
Yeah, sometimes more.
Yeah.
and it comes down to, I think, each title having a clear identity. And with the Doctor, it's the different identity of the Doctor, so that, mm-hmm. that helps. with the Star Wars stuff, who it's featuring. Is it Princess Leia? Is it Chewbacca? Is it Lando? Is it Darth Vader? Is it Luke? Whatever. It's when you start getting titles that feel redundant that you start having problems.
Or, as you pointed out with the Green Hornet, you know, 12 characters, none of which seem to be the one anyone remembers.
Mm-hmm. Well, at that point, it's taking... I don't want to say an iconic character, because I don't feel that way about the Green Hornet, but it really blurs the definition of who it is. It confuses the issue.
Yeah.
You know, I think you could do 5 different Batman titles that in just looking at the covers would be clearly independent and different identities of them.
Mm-hmm.
Have the classic comic book Batman, have the Bruce Timm animated Batman, have the Adam West Batman, have one that looks, you know, evocative of the movie type Batman, you know, and just by having different art styles and the different tone, style, and iconicness of those different personas of Batman.
Well, and even the style.
Yeah.
As we've talked about, you know, Batman and Detective, in theory, could be the exact same character with a very different book.
Absolutely.
We don't have that currently, but they could be.
Again, TJ and I were talking about this, or maybe it was Drew and I anyways. If Detective focused on the detective stories, Batman may be the more action-adventure. And there's a clear, this is what I expect out of this book, this is what I expect out of that other book.
Yeah.
But when it's just, it's another Avenger book, it's another Batman book, that's where I think the lines get blurred. To me, the best example of that right now is Justice League versus Justice League of America. It is thoroughly confusing to me as to why those two books coexist.
I'm enjoying Justice League, to be fair. I actually, you know, I think I was the one person who said Darkseid War was their favorite event this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why either of those books exist, and reading some of the rest of the DC universe, I'm not sure either of those two books exist in that universe either.
Yes. I can read 3 different Justice League stories featuring Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and Flash, and have, in some cases, 3 different Batmans or Green Lanterns or, you know, Supermans, yes, or whatever. It's like, these can't possibly coexist.
Yeah.
Which breaks the illusion of continuity, the illusion of a shared universe, and it creates a dissonance in your mind that's really hard to get past.
So, we kind of looked over the list. What do you want to move on to? Titles, monthly, what do you want to look at?
I was going to say do the monthly, but before we do that, one of the things I wanted to just check real quick,
mm-hmm,
was what the median value was for the top 1,000, and it was 42,407. That's basically the midpoint on the list. That's different, of course, than the average, which is, give me just a sec to go calculate that, 57,528.
What'd you say the median was, and that's it where? That's at rank 500, obviously.
It's an average of 500 and 501.
Okay.
So it's a difference of what, 15,000 units at least?
And what'd you say it was?
The average was...
Not the average, the median.
57,528. The median, hang on, I got to go back and go find it. That's why I wanted to repeat what I just had there.
I think you said about 47,000.
42,407.
Ooh, so actually down. Last year's was about 45,400.
It's one of those that there's so many ways to look at, is the industry going up or down and stuff. Yeah.
And it's hard to know what, you know.
Yeah. So let's go look at a couple of ways to determine if the industry is up or down. Let's go look at top comics by month. Got a couple of charts here. We'll go through these. Again, this is very similar to what I did with TJ last night. This is the aggregate of the top 300 for every month, and I break it down by units, by dollars, then split out Marvel, DC, other, etc. Look at the floor, the ceiling, and the weighted price and stuff. Really, if you look at the top 300 by units, the aggregate sales from January through December, really, first quarter was pretty even, right around 7 million. Second quarter, it went up in April. It started drifting down through second and third quarter, with September being the low point. And then it really kind of arced back up in October, November, and then leveled off, dropped a little in December. If we look at that same stuff, but by total dollars, retail dollars for it, it's very much the same trend, maybe a little bit more pronounced here or there, but the slope of it is virtually identical.
September essentially being the worst month is still surprising to me.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much looking across every one of these charts. September was the worst month, just about any way you look at it.
I'm trying to think what happened in September. I think that was right before...
Was that when Secret Wars got delayed and they weren't quite ready to start putting out the number ones yet?
Yeah, the number ones came out in October, November.
Yeah.
So it was just... And that was also about the six-month point for the post-convergence titles.
Yeah.
Many of which didn't continue due to low sales. So then you wind up with the next month having replacement titles that sold better.
Yeah.
Now, if we split the top units and then the top dollars by publisher, splitting out Marvel and DC, this gives us a little bit better indication of where some of this movement was. And really, the takeaway from Marvel is August, September were not good months, followed by October and November that were great months. And again, that reflects some of the delays in the Secret Wars stuff and the post-Secret Wars launch.
Pointing out, though, that line for Marvel is clearly head and shoulders above the DC and the other line, even at its low point.
The only place DC even comes close is its high point in April.
April.
Is better than the low points in August and September for Marvel.
Yes.
But that's it.
Yeah. And Marvel had a better April as well.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that's... The others are essentially flat, possibly declining even, particularly in the second half of the year.
They end the year a little better for the other publishers than where they started, but only negligibly.
But all the up is in the first, it kind of, both of them high pointed in like May.
Yeah.
And it's been going back down to where it started since then.
Yes. I would totally agree with that. I think there was an opportunity at one point in the year around May for the other publishers when Convergence wasn't doing too well, when Secret Wars was kind of, you know, okay, they've started the miniseries, what's going on there, that kind of stuff. Really, April, though, for DC was a breakout month, really a huge spike both in dollars and units, very atypical for their year. But we're also seeing in the final quarter of the year a definite uptick in both units and dollars for DC.
Well, and that's all Dark Knight.
That's true. So, you know, how that lasts after Dark Knight, we could see it come plummeting down.
I think the trend line, I think the floor is much more interesting than the ceiling.
The ceiling this year is just way skewed, just if nothing else, from the Star Wars at the beginning of the year, setting its ceiling to a million units.
Well, that skews it, and the two high points for the two crazy loot crate issues skew it. But essentially, it's flat at about 200,000, which is about as high as we've ever seen it.
Yeah.
So, for the most part, yeah, technically the trend line slopes down. Basically, it's at 200,000 with three spikes.
If I took out the outliers, I think it'd be pretty flat.
Flat, exactly.
The floor, though, you're right. It went from around 1,500 in January, pretty much up most months. It had a little bit of a downtick in March and
November.
November, a little bit also in August. But
to be fair, that November downtick still has it well above the entire first half of the year.
Yes. Yes, it does.
So
it was weak first quarter, stronger after that, and really, again, later in the year it was... But that's when we started getting all the new number ones. That's when we started getting Dark Knight. That's when we started getting multiple issues of Batman and Robin Eternal. We got a number of things that pushed the lower sellers out of the top 300.
Always the danger when the floor goes up is people, you know, are some of the lower titles doing better or simply being erased from the list?
Well, and the sad reality is they're typically getting erased from the list. You know, we've got a few items from DC right now, like Telos, which are selling just abysmally. And that's going to get replaced by something that's selling acceptably. You know, when you take a title that is doing, 9,618 units with the third issue and replace it with almost anything, you've at least doubled the sales. So, that's...
As long as I don't replace it with weird War Tales again.
Even that first issue would start out better, I think. I need to find a better way to kind of show that I don't say that true strength over the year. That's but something that's a little bit more indicative of what volume, what number of units have concluded, what number of units have been introduced, those sorts of things. We've talked about this last year.
Yeah.
And I am open to suggestions from listeners if you guys have ideas as to how to account, how to find a metric that would reflect the changing size of the pie and easily illustrate what's new, what's gone, what's increased, what's decreased, what's more or less stayed flat.
And the last one here, weighted price, is just more depressing to me.
You know, what's interesting there is while it fluctuated between a low of around 375 in March and a high of, we'll say 420 both in May and October, it pretty much stayed central, you know, within a quarter of a dollar of $4 the entire time.
Yes.
So while we've got some lower priced items, the higher priced items are more or less compensating for that. $399 is here to stay.
Yep.
I hate to say that. Well, let me put it this way. I love to say that. I hope it stays for a really long time. How about that? I fear higher prices than that.
Well, and in a similar yet somewhat different, just to kind of point out, though, talking about this, looking at the exact same chart from a year ago,
mm-hmm.
pretty much at $375, this one's pretty much at $4. It has shifted a quarter in that year.
Yeah, absolutely. Very definitively so. What's interesting is last year it also had kind of that spike early in that second quarter.
The wave looked very similar, but it shifted up 25 cents from start to finish.
Yeah, I would say the only real difference in the shape of the curve, though, is the spike in 2015 near the end of the year. Spike's not the right term. The bump was in October, whereas last year in 2014, that was
it was
September.
In September. Yeah.
Again, we're seeing a very similar trend there. I think we saw a lot more ups and downs in 2014, certainly for Marvel and DC on units and dollars, whereas less so this year. Not the constant up and down and stuff. And likewise, the trend on the floor and the ceiling was substantially different.
Yeah, I think the most interesting difference between this year and last year on the units and dollars by publisher
mm-hmm.
is DC, for the second half of last year's line, was merging with and going around Marvel's, whereas this year it was just clearly below it the entire year.
Yeah, DC at one point was above Marvel briefly.
Yeah, it had months here and there where it was above it, and it was closer to it most of the second half of last year.
And do you know why it was above last year? September. That's
yes.
when they had the 3D covers. They didn't do the September event this year.
No, I know. But Marvel had a bad month in August last year, and DC caught up to them, and DC was above them in December. Yes, the September event certainly helped, but in general, the DC line was much closer.
If you look, though, at the Marvel trend for 2015, September was its weak point, almost as if it was conceding the month to DC, should DC yep. have chosen to do an event.
Yeah.
Kind of, oh, we'll give you this month. I don't think that's what they were thinking. I hope that's not what they were thinking. That's just a little cruel, but and kind, too, in an odd way. But the fact that DC didn't do anything major that month, because it was just a couple of months early that they'd done the Convergence thing. And ironically, again, Convergence in April, that was a bit of a spike for them. I hope the trend we saw at the end of 2015 going up for DC is more than just Dark Knight and things of that ilk, and that it's potentially maybe the start of a turnaround for DC, because they could really use it.
Yep. Well, and same thing with kind of the other publishers. They seem to be slightly lower, both by units and dollars this year. Last year, their line kind of hovered, you know, between 2 million and 1.5 million in units. This year, it spent a lot of time around 2 million, but kind of headed back towards the 1.5 million at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with dollars. Right around 6 to 7 million last year, and this year kind of the same thing with a slight decline towards the end.
I think there's a lot of opportunities for the other publishers, but it's also a big challenge on the comic side, because as we've talked about so many times, there's only so much shelf space, and Marvel and DC claim a lot of it.
Yeah.
So with the number of possible unreported units in the year, you could have gotten onto the top 1,000 list, but you'd have been somewhere in the bottom 20%. Somewhere maybe around 8,000-ish tops. And again, there are a couple of things that just either didn't get reported or whatnot, but rarely is there any major surprise and stuff on the comics list. That's usually more on the trade stuff, because there's a lot more below-the-radar sales. There's more of the long-tail effect of things being published and slowly accumulating sales over time. Typically on the comic side, either you get it the month you're first released or you don't.
Well, and it's the way it should be. It's a periodical. In theory, it should only be available for 1 month.
Yeah, you know, but I think...
I'm sure the August issue of Sports Illustrated is not still selling well either.
True, true. But do you have to read the July, August, September, October, November, and December issues of Sports Illustrated to get a full reporting of a single game or something?
That is true. It is a different nature in that way. You're right.
But it's also something that, again, the industry fundamentally changed when trades came in. I think it's still undergoing some changes with the digital stuff. The nice thing is it was a strong year. It was actually one of the better years overall. And given the amount of risk I think we entered the year with the unknowns at the time of both Convergence and Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm.
If Secret Wars had kind of flopped like Convergence seemed to have, man, these numbers would be really different.
Yeah.
But Marvel, I think, had an excellent exit strategy out of it. They really put some good creators on multiple titles, both within the Marvel Universe, the Star Wars stuff. Quesada is running a really good team over there.
Yep.
You know, if they can get somebody of similar success doing that over at DC, then we would see that line creep up. And I would think if both Marvel and DC are doing well, that gets enough people into the stores, that kind of helps the other publishers just in and of itself.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things I think I loved about Secret Wars, because you know, I've read more Marvel this year than I have in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those books, particularly the miniseries, were just fun.
Yeah. They weren't trying to wow us. They weren't trying to shock us. They were just trying to entertain us. Here's a fun story. What would it be like in the Old West? What would it be like this?
Yeah. And they were just, like I said, a lot of those stories were just fun and colorful and
accessible.
You know, accessible. And
that's where Convergence failed. Hey, do you remember these characters that were published, you know, for two different fifth week events back 10 years ago? Nope. Well, I guess you won't enjoy these books. Well, how about these books
that were published
30 years ago?
Well, yes. It was also, in some cases, those characters would appear for a page or two, and then you wouldn't see them again.
Yeah. The game plan for Convergence was just... Maybe it sounded better at a creative summit and stuff than it turned out to be.
Who was that wrote that? It was some TV writer, right?
Tom King, maybe? King was the last name. There are two Kings floating around the industry right now, and I get them confused. I'm assuming you're looking it up at the moment.
I am.
Thank you.
Jeff.
Jeff King. All right.
Yes. Which was an odd... Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that getting somebody like Mark Waid, Marv Wolfman, somebody of that ilk to spearhead that.
Yeah.
Len Wein, maybe. Somebody who was a writer of major note back in the day, if you will, but also somebody who's got the editorial chops.
Well, and that's the thing. It still amazes me, having just read through much late 70s Marvel, Len Wein was the editor for a lot of that stuff and did a heck of a job keeping it all together.
I think there have been a couple of people that have been brilliant creators or even just okay creators, but also really good editors. And when you've got somebody who's got that combination, not only can they write a good story, entertaining story, maybe not a top seller, but a good solid one nonetheless, but can then edit something and get really great work out of other people.
Yep.
again, you look at Mark Waid, Marv Wolfman, Len Wein. I'm trying to think. There are a couple others that fit into this category. I'm going to go with Mike Carlin on this. His writing's not particularly well known, but he was one of the co-writers and stuff on Captain America for quite a while with Mark Gruenwald.
Well, and when it worked really well, and then it kind of failed miserably, Starlin.
Yeah. But I think we've got a lot of writers these days that don't understand the editing process and some of that side of things. And certainly I think we've got a number of editors that have never written a comic and probably never will. And I think that's more over at DC than at Marvel, I would imagine. And I think that's reflective of their output.
Yeah.
So I think it was a...
I think it was a pretty good year.
It was a good year. Surprisingly smooth. Again, there were some major risks that could have happened over the year that didn't. I think it positions everyone reasonably well going into 2016. We're already 5-6 issues in on some of the Marvel books, but they've got a firm foundation. I think DC's got some stuff they can build on. I think the other publishers are doing well. I'm hoping we've got a strong 2016. As I look out towards the horizon of what's coming, I don't see anything that's a, gee, man, that could really cause a problem, or wow, this could really, you know, guaranteed turn something around for somebody or anything. It seems like right now steady water, smooth water sailing type stuff, but it's only a few weeks into the year. Who knows what we'll be looking at by the end.
Yep.
So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think I'm good.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.